We want to know the rest of the information that the Department of Justice has so that we can determine if there are appropriate Mann Act violations.
State prosecutors ask the federal government to turn over information on Bill Allen. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska Airlines' ad campaign sparks an important conversation about a controversial word.
I would rather be called Inupiaq because that's what I am, and my children are Yupik.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Alaska Attorney General Craig Richards says the state wants authority to pursue charges against former VECO boss Bill Allen for allegedly transporting a young woman across state lines for sex. The state has tried before, but in a letter to U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch today, Richards cites a new law that requires her to allow the state to pursue the federal case or provide a detailed explanation as to why she won't. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Richards, the state's top lawyer, says if the U.S. Attorney General won't let him try to make the sex crime case against Bill Allen, Alaskans deserve to know why.
Because, of course, there has been a longstanding supposition, maybe even an expectation, that immunity deal was cut with Mr. Allen that basically allowed him to not be prosecuted for the crimes committed to his minor victims in return for his testimony against U.S. Senator Ted Stevens in his political corruption trial in 2008.
Allen, once a powerful Alaska businessman and political kingmaker, was the key witness against Senator Stevens. Allen has also been accused in a civil lawsuit of having paid sex with a teenager, starting, she says, when she was 15 and continuing after she moved out of state. Defenders of the late Senator Stevens allege Allen lied on the stand in the Stevens trial to avoid charges he victimized the girl. If the state had reliable evidence Allen had sex with a girl younger than 16, it could bring a child sexual abuse case under state law. John Skidmore, the head of the criminal division at the State Department of Law, says both Anchorage police and the FBI investigated.
We did review the information in that investigation and came to the conclusion that we would not be able to file any state charges against Mr. Allen for anything found in that investigation. However, our review did suggest that there were potential Mann Act violations.
The Mann Act is a federal law making it a crime to transport a person over state lines for prostitution. For the Mann Act, prosecutors don't have to prove a victim was underage. But that's a federal law, and Skidmore says the feds have refused to prosecute the case or to turn over all their files.
We want to know the rest of the information that the Department of Justice has so that we can determine if there are appropriate Mann Act violations, then we'd like to be able to pursue those.
The feds can cross-designate state attorneys to prosecute federal cases, but they've refused to do that, too. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan says the Justice Department has been ignoring the state's requests for information about Allen for years, dating back to Sullivan's turn as state AG.
Well, that ends today.
The state has new leverage in federal law. Sullivan last year added an amendment to a human trafficking bill that requires the U.S. Attorney General to cross-designate states to prosecute Mann Act violations, or to explain why that would undermine the administration of justice. Sullivan says the state's use of the new law sends a message of deterrence.
That if you're a perpetrator of these kind of crimes, sexual abuse of minors, human trafficking, that the state of Alaska, state officials, federal officials working together are not going to rest until you are brought to justice.
Paul Stockler, an attorney representing Allen in the civil case, says Allen did not violate the Mann Act.
He wasn't transporting girls to Alaska for sex.
Also, Stockler says his client did not knowingly have sex with a minor.
She held herself out to be of age, and we believe her to have been of age.
Allen served a prison sentence for bribing state legislators. His testimony helped convict Senator Stevens, but that conviction was later thrown out for prosecutorial misconduct. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
All prison programs in Alaska's correctional institutions will be reviewed, according to newly appointed Corrections Commissioner Dean Williams. Williams is also the co-author of an administrative report released last year that detailed deficiencies in the current system.
Safety is one of my biggest concerns, to be quite frank, inside the prison system right now. It's my top priority. And one of the ways, in addition to a whole myriad of other things, is providing productive activities for people inside.
One of the challenges is adequate prison staffing. The Alaska Correctional Officers Association is the union that represents correctional officers. ACOA President Randy McClellan says corrections officers work 12-hour shifts, and there are not enough of them within the state's institutions.
We are stressed with understaffing. If you're going to rehabilitate somebody, you've got to provide a safe environment.
McClellan says a report issued in July of last year under a previous commissioner indicates the need for more corrections officers with the state's prison system. Dean Williams' 2015 report to the state indicates staff reductions within the prisons significantly impact safety and staff morale.
I agree with Randy on some of the things in terms of staffing issues. There's facilities I've visited that I'm really concerned about. You have to have adequate staffing. I run facilities, too. You have to have adequate staffing. So I'm going to take a look at all of that. I want safe facilities, and I'm probably going to be a broken record on that, but you can't do reentry. You can't do these other things unless you have security inside the facilities.
The two men spoke on Alaska Public Media's program Alaska Edition today. Alaskans want to see the state government preserve their permanent fund dividends and cut its spending. That was the message of the first public testimony on the centerpiece to Governor Bill Walker's fiscal plan. The Senate State Affairs Committee heard yesterday from residents across Alaska on Senate Bill 128. Beth Freed of Palmer asked legislators to balance the budget through spending cuts.
Some of the cuts you could make would be to eliminate the positions that are currently frozen. You could utilize the tools that we used in the 80s, which was a wage freeze, to which the unions agreed for the good of the state. There are many ways you can make cuts.
Walker proposed using permanent fund earnings to pay for much of the state's budget. The governor has also proposed $100 million in spending cuts. Under Walker's plan, the source of dividends would shift to oil and gas royalties. They're expected to decline. Dozens of people who testified asked lawmakers to cut spending to balance the budget. But while spending cuts are popular in general, the public is less certain about which specific programs should be cut. That's according to the Rasmussen Foundation's Plan for Alaska survey. Foundation President and CEO Diane Kaplan said last month the organization is making a new online tool. It will allow residents to develop their own version of the state budget.
When you work to put together your own balanced budget and you say, I want to cut $100 million, we're going to list what could be in that as much as we can. So we're hoping to provide a little bit more detail when people say $500 million, $100 million, $1 billion, what that really means. Because those are big numbers for people and they have a hard time assessing what that exactly means to them.
The House majority launched its own effort to solicit public comment on the budget yesterday. Representatives set up a toll-free call-in line for residents to weigh in on ways to save the state money. Representative Cherie Smollett encouraged people to call this month.
Good ideas come from those that use state government the most. And so we're open to criticism, so we're open to suggestions. And the next 3 weeks are crucial for Alaskans to get their voices heard.
Legislators said they'll take public testimony and phoned-in comments into account as they craft the budget. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the weak Canadian dollar impacts cross-border tourism in Southeast.
It's going to be noticed a lot in Haines and Skagway this summer, that downturn and them visiting.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by... At Alaska Pacific University, you will be inspired by the beauty of Alaska, motivated by devoted faculty, and surrounded by independent-minded, creative students pursuing their higher education goals. There's no time like the present to find out what they are all about. It's time to experience APU. Hashtag, this is our classroom. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Owners of the contentious Legislative Information Office in downtown Anchorage have offered to sell the building for $37 million. The developer says the deal would save the state millions over the next few years and eliminate the potential for lawsuits. The proposal outlines savings to the state if it buys the building outright rather than sticking to the 10-year lease lawmakers agreed to in 2013. One of the building's owners, Mark Pfeffner, says an analysis by the Department of Revenue, the price makes the deal a cheaper option than alternatives like moving the offices to the state-owned Atwood building. But in an accompanying memo, Legislative Affairs Agency Director Pam Varney says Pfeffer's savings claims in the proposal are wrong. The Legislative Council is meeting February 11th to discuss the proposal. Their recommendation will go before the full legislature before it decides whether or not to appropriate money for the lease. After Alaska Airlines unveiled a new look last month for their airplanes and website, many Alaska natives took offense to the phrase, "Meet our Eskimo." The controversy sparked a new round of conversations about what the word Eskimo means to Alaska natives. KYUK's Charles Enoch reports.
Alaska Airlines unveiled their new airplane and website designs late last month. Both prominently feature the familiar face of a smiling Alaska Native elder. The website also included the phrase "Meet Our Eskimo," which was quickly changed to "Meet The Eskimo." But does the change go far enough?
I would rather be called Inupiaq, because that's what I am, and my children are Inupiaq.
That was Blossom Twitchell from Kotzebue.
I want them to be able to connect to their culture, and people won't group us in as little people that live in igloos and give little Eskimo kisses all the time. We are so much more than that. We have culture and traditions that have been passed down for generations, and I don't believe the word Eskimo does our heritage justice.
After the Alaska Airlines redesign incident, Twitchell decided to take it a step further by starting a petition asking the Bureau of Indian Affairs to stop identifying people's ethnicity as Eskimo in federal paperwork. As of Thursday afternoon, the petition had over 50 supporters. And much like the familiar face on the tail of the Alaska Airlines planes, no one seems to have a definitive answer on where the word Eskimo came from. An article by University of Alaska Fairbanks linguist Lawrence Kaplan said the word meaning eater of raw meat might have been given to the Inupiaq people by Western explorers. The article also says the Canadian version of the word could have come from an Ojibwa word meaning knitter of snowshoes. The word isn't used much in Canada as it's considered offensive by many Inuit in the country, but Alaska Natives say they have been using the word for a while. Nils Alexi is a Yupik elder from Bethel.
In my first memories, we used Eskimo when referring to ourselves or each other. Then, along the way, we started using the word Yupik to describe ourselves.
I'm a Yupik.
Alexei's like many Yupiks interviewed for this story that are accustomed to the term and have no firm position about whether it's appropriate or not. Other Yupik elders, however, don't like the term. Dr. Teresa John is an associate professor for Indigenous Studies at UAF.
If we stop using the names other people give us, they will understand. Our ancestors were proud to be Yupik and were strengthened by their way of life. They wanted us, their descendants, to keep our tradition alive, not to act like it's not there, but to understand it and to live it.
John also added the word Eskimo isn't part of the Yupik language or originally any native language in Alaska. Tiffany Zelkowski from Anchorage and the former mayor of Bethel sent a letter to the Alaska Airlines expressing her disappointment about their website statements and invited them to participate in the Racial Equity Summit sponsored by the First Alaskans Institute. Alaska Airlines CEO Brad Tilden released a statement apologizing on behalf of the company for the insensitive reference. The airline ultimately changed their website greeting, completely removing the word Eskimo, and stated they are looking forward to working together with the Alaska Native community to ensure their actions reflect their respect for all Alaska Natives and Alaskans alike. Like most native languages in Alaska, the words Yupik and Inupiaq both mean real person, but what the word Eskimo is not so clear-cut and means different things to different people. For more information and links to sources cited in this story, visit kyuk.org. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
The Canadian dollar continues to hover around 72 cents U.S. That means locals in Haines and Skagway might not see as many Yukon license plates this summer, KHNS's Jillian Rogers reports.
The Canadian dollar has been in steady decline for years. It reached its lowest point in more than a dozen years last month, and depending on who you ask, it's going to get worse before it gets better. Haines and Skagway are already feeling the effects of our friendly neighbor's slumping dollar, and the summer tourist season is still months away.
Getting a coffee?
Mountain Market in Haines has been serving Canadian guests for 25 years. Owner Mary Jean Siebens says the business from Yukoners is a large part of the market's income.
We didn't have a bad year last year. We had a good year, but if the Canadian dollar had been stronger, we would have had that much more of a good year.
Places like Mountain Market that sell food and groceries might have a slight advantage as the dollar threatens to bottom out around 60 cents. People need to eat, after all, and so elective activities like tours might feel the pinch even more.
It's going to be noticed a lot in Haines and Skagway this summer, the downturn and them visiting.
That's Allison Jacobson, the CEO of Alaska Fjord Lines. The tour business offers scenic boat rides between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway and has been on the water for 25 years. It's one of many tour businesses and shops in the Upper Lynn Canal that relies heavily on summer connects. Jacobson says she's still considering the business's tradition of taking Canadian money at par during the slower times of the season.
But we probably won't do it for as long because it's really hard for us to take that hit. But I think that it's still possible that we can get those folks in Haines and Skagway if we run some specials.
Jacobson says her bookings are filling up at a good rate, though there's noticeably fewer Canadian customers. Haynesboro Tourism Director Leslie Ross says a lot of people here take the Canadian contingent for granted. That is, until they stop coming.
With the cruise ships, we kind of know those numbers and we can anticipate what's going to happen. And with the Yukon tourism, we kind of just expect it to be there. So it is something that I think people are watching now. And just a few businesses that I've spoke to, they've seen a significant loss already.
Last week, the Tourism Industry Association of the Yukon canceled its annual convention, slated to be held in Haines. The event lasts a few days and brings in around 150 visitors in April, typically a slower month. Ross says it's a huge disappointment.
We won the bid this year for hosting, and just in the last 2 weeks, they've called and canceled that, mainly due to the low Canadian dollar and a push for them to spend money locally, which is very understandable.
There's no way to predict exactly what the Canadian dollar will do next, but according to the long-term outlook from the National Bank of Canada, it's supposed to hold steady before slowly creeping up in the fall. However, a forecaster at the global investment bank Macquarie told CBC last month he expects the loonie to reach an all-time low of 59 cents by the end of the year. For now, Ross says, all we can do is wait it out. Reporting in Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your friends, family, and neighbors at Raven, Alaska, connecting over 100 communities across the state. Find out more at flyraven.com.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka, Chugia,
Fairbanks, Fort Yukon, Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Alaknarechmute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, beard oil. Two local musicians in Anchorage are diving beards first into the business of male grooming products. They're going for a style reminiscent of Don Draper mixed with well-groomed mountain man. Social media is allowing their company to expand from online orders to local stores, salons, and beyond. APRN's Josh Edge spent an afternoon at company or apartment kitchen headquarters and has this story.
Basically, now we're just stirring up the carrier oils that we put in.
That's Kyle Redding. He's a co-founder of Cut and Caliber, and right now he's whipping up the base for a fresh batch of Flintlock, the company's signature beard oil, in the tiny kitchen of his business partner's apartment.
Make sure all of them are blended together before we start adding the essential oils, which are going to be the fragrance.
Kyle says he originally met his business partner, Stephen Cornfield, through Anchorage's music scene.
He was in a local band, I was in a local band, and we hung out, and we both had the same kind of style and vibe.
Eventually, Kyle moved to Seattle with Stephen's band Thera to test the Lower 48's musical market, where they ended up roommates. That's when the pair decided they wanted to start a business. But what kind of company? Here's Stephen.
Once I moved back up to Alaska, we were just like, you know, hanging out, going to coffee, talking about stuff, talking about ideas, and like he said, we finally narrowed on like having a product-based company, a grooming and lifestyle company, a supply company, really.
At first, ideas ranged from a clothing line featuring t-shirts and hoodies to accessories and socks, but none of those ideas struck quite the right chord until, Kyle says, one of them floated the idea to create their own line of handmade men's grooming products.
We kind of just took off from there, and I mean, as soon as that idea came forth, we were like 100% on board for that from that moment, so.
The men's grooming product industry is booming nationally, but Kyle says it has not quite taken off in Alaska yet. So he and Stephen decided to get ahead of the curve, establishing themselves in the local market. Fast forward past dozens of failed recipes, and Cut and Caliber is about 3 months into its soft launch, selling a variety of items online. So far, their flagship products include things like a solid cologne, mustache wax, and of course beard oil, which Kyle is putting the finishing touches on right now.
See, it's the nice golden color that we kind of aim for. And then next we go on to our scents.
Kyle is digging through a box filled with small vials of scents, searching for the right combination.
Tea tree is up in our vault of scents.
By vault, he really means the small cabinet over the kitchen sink.
Perfect.
After grabbing a couple more scents, adding a drop of this and a touch of that, Kyle takes a sniff.
Let me check the scent on this to make sure we're kind of close.
While Kyle pours the new batch of Flintlock beard oil into each 1 ounce black bottle, Stephen is sitting at a small table in the kitchen, checking out a new product they are preparing to launch.
See, I have a notebook I'm really stoked on, too. We just got these today.
Kyle and Stephen are gradually expanding the Cut and Caliber brand into things like notebooks, combs, and candles. As Kyle is bottling the beard oil, Stephen is figuring out how to pitch the new pocket-sized notebooks on Instagram. Because Cut and Caliber is an online company so far, social media is critical to getting both their products and company name out into the public eye.
Using pen and paper give you a timeless quality that our generation is getting away from. And give me another reason.
Some ideas are not so good.
I feel things that I write down are more important than just the ease of typing it in my phone.
But some are Instagram gold.
And the battery will never run out.
There you go.
Boom. Copy. Done.
That's definitely getting 12 likes on Instagram.
Since social media will play such a big role in whether Cut and Caliber ultimately succeeds or fails, they agonize over each post. And it may be working. According to Kyle, a handful of local companies like Dos Manos in Anchorage and a few local salons have already taken notice.
It's been like pretty humbling just to think, we started 2 months ago and people were like, how much can you get us and when? And it's like, whatever you want.
And as Kyle and Stephen finish sticking new Cut and Caliber labels on the bottles of freshly brewed beard oil, they say supplying those stores, rather than only being available online, is their next step. Though they hope the work can be done from a new, bigger space, rather than in the cramped kitchen of Stephen's apartment. Reporting from my bathroom mirror, figuring out how to use beard oil, I'm Josh Edge.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we caught up with E.J. David at the Racial Equity Summit in Anchorage. He moved from the Philippines to Barrow as a teenager when his dad got a job with the North Slope Borough.
I was 14. It was a huge change. That was probably one of the bigger things that I had to adjust to, especially from, you know, where I grew up in the Philippines. I grew up in Metro Manila with millions and millions of people. And again, in addition to the climate, being a tropical climate, I moved to Barrow, Alaska, which is very cold, but also only a town of about 4,000 people. You know, so I went from giant city, one of the largest metropolises in the world, to probably one of the smallest towns in the world, and not just smallest, but isolated. The only way in and out of Barrow is airplane. After college, I had to leave the state to go to grad school in Illinois, and I think that's when I felt that, like really felt that, you know what? I miss Alaska. Alaska's in my heart, and you know, I really am Alaskan. I saw how unique we are as a community compared to, you know, the Midwest in this case. My wife is Koyukon Athabascan, and we have three kids, so my kids are Philabascans. I think I want people everywhere to know how culturally, racially, and ethnically diverse Alaska is, because one of the bigger stereotypes about Alaska is that, you know, like, there are no peoples of color here, which is, like, the farthest thing from the truth. You know, different ways of living in Alaska, depending on where you are. If you're in the interior, you probably do, you know, do a lot more interior stuff, you know, like hunting and so forth, because you cannot really go fishing in there except for through the rivers, which is a very different kind of fishing than if you live up in the North Slope by the Arctic Ocean. You know, they don't just go fishing over there, they go whaling, you know what I mean, and seal hunting. Different kinds of places, different kinds of life. People say people are feel connected to the outdoors or whatever, feel connected to the land. I know what they're saying, like, oh yeah, they went hiking over the weekend and they feel connected to the land. I think that has a very different meaning for Alaskans. So I think only in Alaska do we really, really mean that we are connected to the land, to nature.
E.J. David lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Josh Edge, Wesley Early, and Annie Fite. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Charles Enoch in Bethel, and Jillian Rogers in Haines. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
GCI, an Alaska-born and raised company connecting Alaskans from the Aleutian to the Arctic, from the North Slope to Southeast, and to the rest of the world, with more than 2,000 employees statewide, a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media.
The Elder Mentor Program is about sharing the wisdom and culture of Alaskan elders in classrooms and communities across Alaska. Elders age 55 and older bring storytelling and modeling of appropriate behavior to the next generation. Earn a small stipend while supporting educational professionals and children. Alaska's elder mentors serve through the National Senior Corps Program. Mentor information at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.